Chapter 7. Shiban. It took 2 more days before we reached the center. Torgon and I fought together in that time, blending our different skills. We made an effort not to countermand one another. On occasion, I would be hungry to push on, and he would not protest. On others, I would accede to his desire to secure an area before we left it. It was not always easy. My warriors did not operate readily with his. We did not mingle much. I met only one of his lieutenants, a Dua warrior named Hakim, and even then barely exchanged 2 words. For all that, we learned from one another. I came to see that Torgon's way of war had things to recommend it. I hoped that he felt the same way about ours. By the time we broke into the core of the Grinder, we had taken more casualties than we had during years of prior campaigning. My own brotherhood was ravaged, down to barely 2/3 of its original strength. I did not regret that. None of us did. We had always known that the Greenskins would fight hard for their final foothold, and those who had died like warriors. If there had been more time, though, I would have mourned Batu, who had always been close to me. I would also have mourned Hasi, who had been a cheerful soul and who would have achieved great things had he survived. Sangjai retrieved their immortal elements, and so a portion of them was destined to live on in the actions of others. As ever, we preserved their armor and their weapons, and left their mortal bodies to return to the earth and sky of Chondax. Even in the ravines, sheltered from the worst of the wind, we could see them begin to wear away to nothing. I knew that the plateau, the place we had fought so hard for and with so much bloodshed, would now be blasted clean again, bone white, empty, echoing. I had seen the monuments raised to the Imperium on Ulanor and had marveled at them. They would last for millennia. Nothing like that would remain to mark our presence on Chondax. We were like ghosts there, flitting across the wastes, killing briefly before our presence was scrubbed from existence. But the combat was real enough. The ruthless, ceaseless, brutal combat. That was real. By the time we reached the core, we were weary, driven into fatigue by the unflagging resistance of the orcs. My armor was dirty brown from bloodstains. My breastplate was chipped and dented. My helm scored by blade marks. My muscles, hardened to a life of constant warfare by habit and genetic proving, never lost their dull ache. I had not slept for days. But when we crested the last rise, coming to a halt along the lip of a long cliff edge and gazing out into the object of our exertions, our spirits lifted. We saw the final mountain, the rusting fortress of the enemy, and we smiled. It was a broad circular bowl, carved out of the broken landscape like the gigantic scoop of a spoon. We stood on the southern edge of it, looking north into its center. We could just make out cliffs on the far side, half lost in dust and distance. The floor of the depression was smooth and empty, a barren expanse of naked rock that gleamed in the light of the suns. The land ran away from us in a shallow curve, sweeping down nearly 200 meters before leveling out. In the center of the bowl stood the citadel, a spike of rock, jagged and cracked by time, hurled upward from the bare stone like a hunting lance piercing a carcass. It rose up over 200 meters, breaking into a series of slender pinnacles that glistened like splintered bone in the sunlight. The orcs had had a long time to work on it. They had looped walls around it and towers across it, and twisting stairways slung between the slender rock turrets. The flanks of the citadel bristled with guns, and columns of soot-black smoke belched from its base. Enormous machines growled away within. Engines, generators, forges. I guessed that those things had been taken from one of their cavernous space-going hulks, perhaps one that had crashed into the world a long time ago, and had been slowly turned into the heart of their last redoubt. The citadel had many gates, each with heavy lintels of rust-crusted iron. Thousands of greenskins milled about on the ramparts above, bellowing their challenges into the clear air. Many thousands more, I guessed, sheltered further within, waiting for the attack they knew was coming. Near the top of the haphazard pile of interlocking structures, lodged among a cluster of lopsided walls and precarious weapons platforms, was a mass of bolted metal sheets in the rough image of a giant greenskin head. I saw 10-meter-long tusks and flaming eye sockets, each the size of a man. Slaps of red and yellow paint had been thrown across its angular skull. Slivers of lime-green light danced across the surface, indicating the presence of rudimentary shielding. The structure might have been some quasi-religious artifact, or perhaps a den for the shaman caste, or an elaborate garrison for their elite warriors. Perhaps their leader resided in there, squatting like a bloated insect in the dark, while its minions died around it. That level of artifice surprised me. We had never seen orcs build such structures, even during the slaughter of Ulanor. As I gazed at it, I guessed the truth. The greenskins learned fast. We had always known that about them. If they were not utterly exterminated by the forces ranged against them, they would eventually turn any weapon back against its bearer. Even here, hammered into submission and bereft of hope, they were still working on new tools of destruction. They had seen what weapons we had used to lay them low, and the inspiration had lodged deep in their brutish minds. Somehow, driven by some astonishing capacity for replication, they were still laboring. They were building a titan. I noted the routes up to that grotesque head, the tottering gantries, the rough-cut stairs, the clattering elevator shafts. I memorized them quickly, knowing that once we were inside the citadel, I would have no time to orientate myself. By then, I could hear distance-echoed reports of gunfire from the far side of the wide depression. My helm displays showed the signals of other brotherhoods closing from the north, east, and west. Already some squads had broken out of cover and were streaking down the long slopes of the bowl toward the citadel. The guns on the walls opened up, hurling their shells in long arcs at the incoming jet bike squadrons. I turned to Torgon, who, as ever, stood at my side. "Ready, brother?" I asked. "Ready, brother," he said. I held my gauntlet up, open-handed in the Chogorian way. He clasped it. If we had been warriors of the Altak, we would have cut our palms, allowing the blood to mingle. "The Emperor be with you, Shibban Khan," he said. "And with you, Torgon Khan," I replied. Then we activated our blades, gunned our engines, and broke into the charge. As Khan, I could have taken one of my Brotherhood's remaining bikes from its owner, but chose not to. I saw no reason to deprive any of my warriors of their mount just because I had lost mine. So I ran, just like the others around me whose jet bikes had been downed. We surged down the slope, crying out and letting our blade edges hiss with energy. Over 100 of us sprinted alongside one another, whooping and roaring, swinging our glaives and tulwars around our heads. The remaining jetpacks thundered overhead, laying down a crashing layer of heavy bolter fire and screaming ahead to the walls. I watched them soar with envy and with joy. I saw the superb control of their riders, the way they banked and thrust in the sparkling sunlight. They were so natural, so effortlessly deadly. I wished to be among them. Deprived of that raw power, I ran hard, using my own native speed and my armor's peerless machine boost. I felt my muscles work, shot through with hyperadrenaline and combat stims. My brothers charged with me, kicking up dust from their pumping limbs. At the edge of vision, I could see other warriors spill into the depression. Dozens crested the rise, then hundreds. Entire brotherhoods broke from cover, streaking into the open. I did not wait to count, but before I reached the walls, there must have been thousands of us in the attack. I had not seen such White Scars numbers since making Planetfall. We were together again, reunited in the splendor of our full, dreadful potential. The noise of it. The voxed battle cries, the massed drum of boot falls, the percussive clamor of the jet bikes. It thrilled me to my core. The entire bowl filled with the whoosh and crack of incoming fire. Primitive flak bursts studded the air, downing several bikes even before they had come within bolter range of the walls. Artillery crashed out at us, ploughing up the wind-worn rock and scattering whole squads of charging warriors. Massive, snub-barreled guns opened up, lobbing shells into our path and ripping up the terrain. I felt my secondary heart kick in, and relished the blood pumping through my veins. My long hair whipped in the racing wind. My Guandao trembled from its death-hungry disruptor field, eager to bite into flesh again. I leapt over smoking craters and swerved round heaps of blazing wreckage, building up speed with every stride. We were like a bursting tide of ivory, spilling into the depression from all directions and racing toward the flaming pinnacle at its center. Everything moved, everything hurtled, everything streaked and blazed in a smear of white, gold, and blood red. Shadows of jetpacks raced across us as they wheeled into their searing attack runs. The walls ahead were already burning, cracked open and leaking acrid columns of smoke. We gained one of the many gates, freshly devastated by volleys of heavy bolter strikes and missile fire. Orcs rushed out to meet us, slavering with rage. They were bigger than any I had seen on Chondex, almost as big as some of the monsters we'd seen on Ulanor. They lumbered right at us, stumbling over their own clawed feet just to get into blade range. We crunched back into them, bursting through what remained of the gates, spinning, hacking, blasting, punching, gouging. Two hordes, one blinding white, one sickly green, crashed together in a morass of blades, bullets, and flailing limbs. I surged up a tangled slope of rubble, my glaive flying around me. Orcs lurched down, shoving aside debris and kicking up dust. I thundered into them, dragging my Guandao in whirling arcs. Its edge sliced clean through iron plate, skin, and bone, flinging scraps around it as it flickered back and forth. I cut them down before they knew I was even within range. Every stroke whistled cleanly, delivering crushing levels of force before springing away again and moving on to the next target. Throughout it all, my brother's gunfire roared away, blasting exposed armor pieces into shrapnel and shredding flesh into chunks of bloody meat. In those moments, tearing into battle under the incandescent light of three suns, we had become the storm. We were irresistible, too savage, too skilled, too swift. I tore on upward, fighting past the ruined gates and into the tottering maze of the ramshackle citadel beyond, flanked by Jochi and others of my Mingan Keshig. More orcs threw themselves at us, swinging down from corrugated roofs and burning webs of scaffolding. I punched one full in the face with my ceramite gauntlet, splintering its skull into bloody shards, before spinning away to crunch my boot into the stomach of another. My glaive threw gore around in swathes, streaking my armor and spraying my helm lenses.
"Onward!"
I roared, pumped with aggression and energy.
"Onward!"
My brothers swept along with me, racing up ladders to reach greenskins on platforms and charging up stairwells to purge them from the ramparts. When one of us was thrown down, another took his place. We gave them no room to breathe, to think, to react. We used our speed and our power in turn, swiveling away from danger only to surge back in with our power weapons spitting. The citadel became clogged with bodies, thousands of them, all locked in close combat amidst the burning towers, slaying and being slain in great bloody droves. The deafening noise of it, amplified and distorted in the claustrophobic narrows, made the towers tremble and shake down sheets of dust. As I fought my way up, I lost sight of Torgon. Only my own brothers, those whom I had led across the crusade for 100 years of warfare, kept up with me. We raced together, blasting aside all who came before us, shouting and laughing for the sheer exuberance of it. My armor clanged from repeated solid round impacts, but I never slowed. The blades of the enemy came at me in clumsy swipes, but I thrust them aside and slew their owners. I heard the screams and bellows of greenskins ringing in my ears, and it only fueled my drive to kill. I inhaled the stench of orc bodies and orc filth and orc blood, a hot musk of alien excreta. Everywhere. Every stinking corner of that shoddy place rang with the clash of weaponry. Every rusty facet flashed with the reflected burn of gunfire. That made me feel alive. I felt unstoppable. I felt immortal. "Father Kagan!" I cried, my chest burning and my eyes blazing as I powered upward, ever upward. I knew he would be there somewhere. I would kill and kill, slaying with abandon, purging every last one of them, driving my body beyond all limits of endurance, just for the chance to see it. Whatever Torgon thought, I had faith. I would see him fight again. And after that, everything that had happened on Chandax, all the long, long years of hunting, it would all be vindicated. I knew he would be there. As we sprinted, I caught glimpses of the combat raging down in the lower flanks of the citadel. Pitched battles raged across every surface. Gun platforms and defense towers were snarled up with overflowing scrums of close combat, pitting whole gangs of greenskins against tight knots of embattled white scars. Raging fires broke out everywhere, fed by burst fuel dumps in the bowels of the structure. Thousands of warriors were still streaming across the depression to join the fight, tearing across the plains and into combat. Thousands of defenders rose to meet them, staggering out of their smouldering dens and bunkers with fierce, violent desperation lit up in their twisted faces. As for us, we'd burned faster and higher than any others. We broke out of a shattered and burning elevator shaft, clinging to the yawing metal struts before flinging ourselves clear. We burst out onto a wide, flat metal platform, strung up amid the finger-like pinnacles of stone. Jochi was with me, as were dozens of my brothers, their armor charred, cracked, and glistening with gore. At the far end of the platform hung the lower jaws of the huge orc head I had seen from the cliffs. It was even bigger than I had guessed, 20 meters tall and wide, a bulbous mass of riveted scrap and rust-crusted wreckage, suspended amid a sclerotic tangle of walkways and buttresses, like some giant iron dirigible. I started to give the assault order, but the words died on my lips. The structure issued a low, grinding bellow that made the rickety gantries around us shake and tremble. I struggled to keep my feet as the flimsy platform beneath me swayed wildly. A heavy metal panel detached from the base of the grotesque artificial head, peeling away and clanging against the far end of the platform. Then another fell, revealing a glowing, smoke-filled void on the inside. I heard the sound of pistons withdrawing, and the hiss of heavy lifting gear wheezing into action. Earth-brown smoke belched out of the gap and rolled across the platform toward us.
"Kill it!"
I ordered, bracing myself against the juddering metal, taking my Guandao one-handed and drawing my bolt pistol. I fired, joining the torrent of bolter rounds thundering out from my brothers. The barrage lanced into the ragged opening at the base of the head structure. I heard echoing explosions from within as the rounds went off and muffled wails of rage. Something had been hit. Something was in pain. Only then, roaring and slurring, did it emerge. It burst out of the base of the head, crashing through the remaining walls with a drunken, lurching gait and throwing the remnants aside in a shower of smoking metal. A huge, muscle-bunched arm shot out, then another, hauling a vast and swollen body after it. A grossly distended head emerged, hung with low-slung jaws and drooling lips, clustered with weeping sores and marked with festering scarification. I saw two yellow, watery eyes sunk deep below a low, knobbly brow. I saw tusks grind against one another as the creature roared again, and gobbets of thick spittle flying from its gaping maw. When it moved, its obese frame shuddered, shaking the bones and armor fragments that clung to it like barnacles around the yawing hull of a ship. I had never seen one so big. When it moved onto the platform, the bracings below it twisted under the weight. Its arms were encased in cages of metal, from which tubes ran directly into its flesh and sinew. Iron gauntlets encased its fists, each one of them bigger than my torso. Ripples of green energy sluiced across it, spitting and fizzing where they met the creature's skin. It stank. A pungent mixture of bestial musk, engine oil, and the sulphurous discharge of shield generators. I had seen chieftains of their kind before, of course. Giant bulls that had roared their defiance to the heavens and charged into battle with reckless abandon. Those monsters were driven by savage lusts of battle, the burning desire to crush, to slay, to destroy, and to feed. This one was different. It was fused with clanking technology, bolted into its armor like one of our lobotomized weapon servitors. Had they learned that from us too? And its anger was different. The noises it made, the way it moved, the swimming lack of focus in its animal eyes. All of that was different. I knew then that I was seeing what happened to the greenskin when nothing remained but defeat. They did not keep blindly raging, nor did they plead for mercy, nor did they learn at last how to fear their enemy. They went mad.
"Bring it down!"
I roared, aiming for its head. We opened up with everything we had left. We fired rounds directly at it and watched them explode across its shielding. I saw Jochi launch himself into a charge, ducking and wheeling under the fire lines to bring his blade in close. He was swatted clear with a vicious backhand and sent cartwheeling over the edge of the platform, his breastplate crushed. I saw others try the same, all of them moving with their habitual speed and prowess. None of them even got close. They were crunched aside by those iron gauntlets, knocked to the ground as if they were children. The monster waded forward, flailing with cybernetic arms, vast and monstrous, and slobbering with febrile madness. I holstered my pistol and grasped my Guandao two-handed, already breaking into the charge that would carry me into range. It saw me coming and lurched to meet me, swinging its huge arms in clumsy, devastating sweeps. I dived under one of the gauntlets and twisted around, aiming my glaive into the creature's wrist. The biting edges ground up against the shield in a shower of sparks. A sharp bang was followed by a stink of cordite, and the shimmering barrier over the creature's forearms flickered out. Before I could take advantage, the beast swung back at me, keeping its other fist low. I tried to scrabble away, but its gauntlet slammed heavily into my side. I was hurled clear, clattering across the platform, my blade still clutched in my hand. The world spun around me, and I had a brief glimpse of the fortress's topmost pinnacle above me, swinging across the sky. I skidded to a halt, knowing that the monster would be right behind me. I leapt to my feet and angled my blade back. I connected again, severing one of the cables that looped from its shoulders. Fluid cascaded over me, hot and stinking. As my blade's disruptor slashed through, it ignited, dousing us both in flaring green flames. I pressed the attack, zigzagging the Guandao in a blur of speed, going for the active shielding. I had no chance. For all its huge bulk, it was fast. An ironclad fist shot out, catching me below the throat and crashing into me with the force of a skidding rhino. I was sent sprawling for the second time, nearly blacked out from the impact and hurled hard over to the far side of the platform. I saw the fire-tattered edge coming and blurrily tried to grab onto something. My gauntlet almost closed on a splintered stump of wreckage, but the corroded metal collapsed under my grasp. I clattered over the edge, my armor gouging sparking trails in the steel. I looked down and saw the sheer sides of the citadel drop away below me, 200 meters of empty air before the mass of burning structures near ground level. In that split second, suspended over collapsing shards of rust and about to plummet, I saw death coming for me. Then a hand grasped my wrist. I was hauled back, away from the crumbling edge, my armor-clad bulk heaved back onto the platform as if I weighed nothing. As I was dragged back up, I stared, disorientated and fog-visioned, into a pair of glittering eyes set deep in a scarred brown face. For a split second I gazed into those eyes, rigid with shock. Then a huge body swept up and over me, followed by the rush of a fur-lined cloak and the sound of boots striding purposefully into combat. Even then, my mind did not process what had happened. For a moment, I did not know what I was seeing. Then, the fog cleared. My senses returned. I looked up, daring to believe, and saw at last who had saved me. I do not know how he had made it up to the platform undetected. I do not know how long he had been fighting to get there. Perhaps his approach had been masked by the noise and violence of the melee, or perhaps he had been able to conceal his presence somehow. Nobody was ever able to tell me where he had been while the assault was underway, nor how he had managed to enter combat at just that moment, without warning, without announcement. I do not know whether he did such things deliberately, to add uncertainty to the shape of the battle, or whether it was just how matters were fated. None of that mattered. The Khagan, the Great Khan, the complete warrior, the Primarch of the Fifth Legion, had unveiled himself at last. He was there, right before my eyes, on Chondax. He was there. My first instinct was to rush into battle at his side, to pick myself up and add my blade to his. I immediately saw how pointless that would be. He had come with his keshik, a whole phalanx of giants in bone-white terminator plate, and even they did not come between the Khan and his prey. They hung back around the platform edges, silent and massive, ensuring that nothing, green skin or white scar, intervened. Below us, the battle continued unabated. But up on the platform, under the shadow of that massive ruined alien head, only two warriors fought. He was tall, lean even in his ivory armor. A heavy crimson cloak hung from his shoulders, lined with mottled ermite fur, and covering the fine gilt curves of the ceramite plates beneath. He carried a Dao saber, with a glass-polished blade that flashed in the sun. His shoulder guards were gold, engraved with flowing Korchin characters and the lightning strike sigil. Two Chogorian flintlocks nestled at his belt, ancient and opulent, studded with pearls and bearing the guild marks of their long-dead makers. On Ulanor, I had seen him fight from a distance, marveling at the tremendous destruction he wrought amidst the congested fields of total war. On Chondax, I saw him fight at close quarters, and it took my breath away. I have never, before or since, seen swordsmanship like it. I have never seen such balance, such contained savagery, such unrelenting, remorseless artistry. As he whirled the blade around, sunlight shone from his gilded armor like a halo. There was a cruelty to it, a razor-edged note of aristocratic disdain, but there was also splendor. He handled his blade as though it were a living thing, a spirit he had tamed and now forced to dance. Yusugai had said that only poets could be true warriors. I understood then what he meant. The Great Khan distilled the sprawling language of combat to its core of dreadful, merciless purity. Nothing was extravagant. Nothing was wasteful. Every stroke carried the full measure of murder within it, just enough and nothing more. He hammered the maddened beast back, step by step, forcing it toward the far end of the platform. It raged at him, bellowing in a burbling frenzy of fury and misery. It swung its gauntlets wildly in massive bone-breaking arcs, hoping to swipe him from the platform, as it had done with us. The Khan stayed close to it, his cloak swirling as he worked back and forth, sending his blade darting out and cutting back, using the long curved edge to carve through the creature's shambolic armor and bite deep into the addled flesh beneath. Whole sections of shielding were shattered, overloading the generators on the creature's back and making the tangled wiring burst and pop. It tried to smash him to the floor with a wild haymaker, and he spun out of the challenge, plunging the edge of the saber down hard as he moved. The orc's severed gauntlet-clad fist clanged to the metal, taken cleanly at the wrist and doused in a spray of steaming blood. The monster raged on, its eyes wild and froth bubbling from its open maw. Its other fist swung round, as fast as the blow that had felled me. By then, the Khan had already moved, pivoting on one foot and angling his blade back to meet the incoming sweep. The gauntlet crashed against the dhow, and I felt the platform shudder from the impact. The Khan held his ground, bracing his sabre two-handed, and the creature's iron fist cracked open, exposing a bloody, pulpy claw within, striated with cabling and corroded piston sleeves. The greenskin was weaponless then. It reeled away from the onslaught, and its roars became weaker and more desperate. The Khan went after it, maintaining the icy, austere ferocity of his attack. His blade flashed out, slicing a weeping chunk of blubber from the creature's torso. Then it switched back, cutting a long gash across its chest. Armor pieces shattered and fell like rain from its heaving shoulders, mingling with the slurry of blood that pooled and bubbled at its feet. When the end came, it was quick. The beast rocked back onto its haunches, its stomach streaming blood and its jaws hanging limp. It stared up at its killer, its tiny eyes swimming with fluid and its chest trembling. The Khan raised the dhow high, holding it in both hands, his feet planted firmly. The greenskin made no move to protect itself. Its damaged face was a piteous, weeping mess, marked by abject wretchedness and bewilderment. It knew what was being destroyed. It knew what had been lost. I did not like to see that face. It was an ignoble end for something that had fought so hard and for so long. Then the sword whistled down, trailing lines of gore as it plunged. The beast's head fell to the platform with a dull, booming thud. The Khan withdrew his blade with a cold flourish. For a moment, he stood over the vanquished warlord, gazing imperiously down at it, his long cloak lifting in the smoke-drifted air. Then he stooped to retrieve the beast's head. He swiveled smoothly, holding the agonized skull high above him in one hand. Blood streamed from the beast's fleshy neck cavity, slapping against the metal floor in thick slops.
"For the Emperor!"
roared the Khan, and his voice rang out across the bowl and high into the sky. From below us, from the levels where the fighting still burned, a massed shout of acclamation rose up, overmastering the animal howls of the surviving orcs and the crackle and rush of the flames. I heard them answer him, hurling the same word up into the air over and over.
"Khagan! Khagan! Khagan!"
That was the moment when I knew we had won at last. Years of ceaseless campaigning had finally come to an end. The war on Chondax had ended in the only way it could have ended, with our Primarch holding the head of the defeated enemy in his fist, and with the voices of his legion, the Ordu of Chogoris, rising in savage joy toward the vaults of heaven. I joined them. I cried out his name, my fists clenched with euphoria. I was glad we had won. I was glad that the white world was cleansed at last, and that the crusade would grind onward, taking another step on the road toward galactic hegemony. But that was not the main source of my fervor. I had seen the terrible power of the great Khan unleashed, the spectacle I had coveted for so long. It was not a disappointment. I had seen perfection. I had seen the poetry of destruction. I had seen the paragon of our warrior breed in the full flood of his matchless glory. My joy was complete. I met Torgon one more time on Chondax. It took many hours to subdue the citadel entirely. The greenskins, true to their nature, never stopped fighting. By the time the last of them was hunted down and killed, the fortress had begun to disintegrate around us, consumed by explosions from below and raging fires from above, and we had to withdraw. I led what remained of my brotherhood out onto the plain at the base of the depression. Many tasks remain for us. We needed to make a tally of the slain, to direct Sanjai to those wounded who might live, to recover what we could of our fleet of damaged mounts for onward transport. I remember only fleeting impressions from that time. My head was filled with visions of the Khan, and it made me distracted. Even as I worked, I could not shake the images of him in action. I rehearsed the blade maneuvers he had made, over and again, running through them in my mind and resolving to adopt those that I could once back in the practice cages. Amidst all the devastation, with the fortress before us blazing and smoking in its ruin, all I saw was his curved dao flashing in sunlight, his gilded armor moving smoothly under the cloak, his jewel-like eyes that had looked briefly into mine. I would never forget it. One does not forget the fury of living gods. Other brotherhoods, nearly a dozen of them, had done the same thing as we had, and were reordering themselves in the aftermath of the battle. Once the bulk of my brotherhood had been extracted and had regrouped, I went to find Torgon. I guessed that the Ming'an would disperse quickly, and I did not wish to leave without making the appropriate courtesies. When I found him, I saw that his brotherhood had fared better than mine. I learned later that they had fought with honor, seizing many of the gun mounts on the walls and destroying them. Their actions had allowed many other squads to break through the perimeter without enduring the losses that we had taken. He had done well, and had enhanced his reputation for solid, competent command. For all that, though, I could not help but pity him a little. He had not seen the things that I had seen. He would leave Chondax with only a glimpse of glory from afar.
"Did he speak to you?"
Torgon asked me, showing more interest than I had expected. He had taken his helm off. The lenses were cracked and useless, but otherwise he looked almost unscathed. "He did," I said. I was in much worse shape. My battle plate was riddled with dents, breaks, and gouges. My gorge was shattered from where the beast's gauntlet had hit me, and much of my suit's sensory array was inoperative. The fleet's armory would be busy with us for months before we would be ready to deploy again.
"What did he say?"
Torgon asked, pressing me for answers. I remembered every word. "He commended us on our speed," I said. "He said that he had not expected to be beaten to the summit. He said that we were a credit to the Legion." I remembered the way he had walked up to me after the beast was dead, watching tolerantly as I had struggled to bow before him. His armor had been pristine. The creature had not so much as scratched it. "He told me that speed was not the only thing, though," I said. "He said that we were not berserkers like the wolves of Fenris, that we could not forget that we had responsibilities other than breaking things." Torgon laughed. The sound was infectious, and I chuckled at the memory. "So his advice was similar to yours in the end," I said.
"I'm glad to hear it," Torgon said.
I looked out across the wide depression, over to where orbital landers had already come down from the fleet, ready to begin the long process of resupply and refit. Mortal auxiliaries were beginning to make planetfall, shuffling out in their awkward environment suits to liaise with the warriors of the Legion. I saw a woman walking among them, a grey-haired official wearing a transparent dome helmet over her suit. It seemed to me that she was in charge of the others, though she didn't look Chogorian. She looked Terran. I wondered what she was doing there.
"So what now for you?" asked Torgon.
I shrugged, turning back to him. "I do not know," I said. "We await orders. And you?" Torgon looked at me strangely then, as if trying to decide whether to tell me something important. I remembered how he had looked during our first conversation, when he had struggled to explain his brotherhood's name and customs. It was much the same then.
"I can't say," was all he told me.
It was an unusual reply, but I did not press him. I thought little of it, for mission orders were often restricted, and he was entitled to keep his Brotherhood's business to himself. In any case, I had secrets of my own. I did not tell Torgon what else I had seen the Khan do. I did not tell him that he had turned away from me quickly after our brief meeting, distracted by an approach from one of his Keshig. I could recall every word of that exchange, too. Every gesture.
A message, Khagan,
his Terminator-armored bodyguard had said.
From the War Master.
The Keshig had shaken his head.
Not from him. About him. What does it say?
There had been an awkward pause.
I think, my lord, that you might wish to take this on the flagship.
After that, I had seen an expression on the Khan's face that I had never expected to see there. Amidst all the pride, all the assurance, all the martial majesty, I had seen a terrible shadow of doubt ripple across those haughty features. For a moment, only a moment, I had seen uncertainty, as if some long-buried nightmare had rushed back inconceivably into waking thought. I will never forget that look, imprinted for the briefest of seconds on his warrior's face. One does not forget the doubts of gods. Then he had gone, striding away to whatever tidings they were that demanded his attention. I had been left on the platform, surrounded by those of my brotherhood who had survived the final assault, wondering what news could have prompted such a rapid departure. At the time, the episode had troubled me. Facing Torgon, however, with the fortress of our enemies in ruins and the strength of the Legion gathering around me again, I found it hard to reconstruct that emotion. We had triumphed, just as we had always triumphed. I had no reason to suppose that it would not always be so. You were right, I said. Earlier, you were right. Torgon looked amused. What do you mean? We should learn from the others, I said. I could learn from you. This war is changing, and we need to respond. I did not defend well back in the Gorges. A day will come when we will need to master these things, not just the hunt. I'm not sure why I said all that. Perhaps the lingering memory of the Khan's unexpected anxiety had dented my confidence. Torgon laughed. He was not laughing at me that time. I think we had both come to understand one another too well for that. No. I don't think you should change, Shibban Khan, he said. I think you should remain as you are. I think you should stay reckless and disorganized. He smiled. I think that you should laugh when you are killing. I followed his recommendation. When I killed, I laughed. I let the ice wind pull my hair free, and I felt hot blood against my skin. I ran far and strongly, daring my brothers to keep pace. I was like the Bearcut, the hunting eagle, free of the jesses, out on the rising air, high up on the horizon. That was what we were back then. That was what we all were. Mingan Kasuga, the Brotherhood of the Storm. That was our ranking name, the one we used to differentiate ourselves. In private, we were the Laughing Killers. To the rest of the galaxy, we were still unknown. That would change. Soon after Chondax, we would be dragged headlong into the affairs of the Imperium, hauled into a war whose origins we had missed and of whose causes we knew nothing. Powers that had barely registered our existence would suddenly remember us, and our allegiance would become a matter of import for both gods and mortals. The story of that war has yet to be written. As I stand now, gazing at the stars and preparing for the fires we shall unleash upon them, I do not know where the fates will lead us. Perhaps this will be the mightiest of our many endeavors. The final examination of our species before its ascendance into mastery. If I am truthful to myself, I find it hard to believe that. I find it more tempting to think that something terrible has gone awry, that the policies and stratagems of ancient minds have faltered, and that our dreams hang over the abyss by a thread of silk. If that is so, then we will fight to the last, putting our mettle to the test, doing what we were bred to do. I take no joy in that. I will not laugh as I kill those whom I have always loved as brothers. This war will be different. It will change us, perhaps in ways we do not even begin to guess. In the face of that, I take some comfort in the past. I remember the way we used to fight, without care, with vigor, with abandon. Of all the worlds where we labored, I will remember Chondax with the most fondness. I could never hate that world, no matter the cost in blood to us of its taking. It was the last time that I hunted in the way I was born to, untrammeled, as free as a falcon on the steep dive. Above all, nothing will rival the memory of that final duel. If I live to see the ruin of everything, if I live to see the walls of the Imperial Palace broken and the plains of Chogoris consumed by flame, I will still remember the way he fought then. That perfection is fixed in time, and no force of malignity can ever extinguish what was done, there, before my eyes, atop the last spire of the White World. If Yusugai were here with me, he would find the right words. I am no longer confident that I have the gift for it. But were I forced, I would say this. There was a time, a brief time, when men dared to challenge the heavens and take on the mantle of gods. Perhaps we went too far, too fast, and our hubris may yet doom us all. But we dared it. We saw the prize and we reached out to grasp it. In fleeting moments, just fractures of time amidst the vastness of eternity, we caught glimpses of what we could become. I saw one such moment. So we were right to try. We were right to attempt it. He showed us that, less by what he said than by what he did. What he was. It is for that reason that I will never regret our choices. When the time comes, I will stand against the darkening heavens, keeping his example fixed before my eyes, drawing strength from it, using it to make me as lethal and imperious as he. And when death finally comes for me, as it will, I will meet it in the proper way, with my blade held loose, my eyes narrow, and warrior's words on my lips. For the Emperor, I shall say, beckoning fate. For the Khan.